Today is Thursday, May 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the World Health Organization says it's possible COVID-19 will be with us indefinitely.
And this virus may never go away. HIV has not gone away, but we've come to terms with the virus, and we have found the therapies, and we've found the prevention methods.
Conflicting reports in the U.S. on how to manage the pandemic response. Also ahead, Cameroonians are flocking to traditional healers for coronavirus herbal medicines. It's all on today's International Edition. While U.S. states are beginning to restart their economies after months of paralyzing coronavirus lockdowns, experts say it could take weeks until it becomes clear whether those reopenings cause a spike in COVID-19 cases. The Associated Press reports it has read a document showing how the nation's top disease experts differ from the White House in their thinking about how to manage the pandemic. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The document's dozens of pages long with detailed guidance on how to safely reopen businesses and institutions. It's more detailed than previously reported parts of guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which the White House shelved last month. It has more restrictive measures than the Trump administration plan released last month, which puts the burden for reopening decisions solely on governors and local officials. The CDC plan calls for a coordinated national response. The White House has called the CDC document a draft that was not ready for release. The CDC's director told lawmakers yesterday the recommendations will be released soon, but gave no more details. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, told Congress on Tuesday that lifting the sweeping lockdowns could touch off new outbreaks of the illness, which has killed nearly 81,000 Americans and devastated the economy. As new clusters emerge around the globe, World Health Organization Executive Director Dr. Michael Ryan says the coronavirus may never go away.
I think it is important that we be realistic, and I don't think anyone can predict when or if this disease will disappear.
Well, around the world, there are 54 Commonwealth of Nations, most of which are all former territories of the British Empire. Patricia Scotland is the organization's Secretary General. She spoke with International Edition's Steve Miller via Skype about the challenges member stations there are facing during the COVID-19 pandemic and what is being done to address their needs.
Yeah, well, I think one of the most important things is that we do have those 54 countries. And as you know, we have rich ones, we have poor ones, we have big ones, we have small ones, and we have everything in between. And because this pandemic is something that none of us have seen before, and there was a real ignorance as to how we should deal with it, it's meant that we've had different iterations, that some of our countries who have experienced it first and maybe have not known quite how to respond effectively, we've learnt from what they did and what they failed to do. And in sharing all of that knowledge, all of that understanding, we have been better able to support those who are in the second wave to do earlier the sort of things that will really make the difference.
You brought about this is that there are different circumstances among the 54 countries, yeah. And there are some rich ones, there are some poor ones. So how is the knowledge being transmitted, and what steps and in what ways is the Commonwealth actively helping, you know, one another out?
Well, immediately this happened and we had to go in lockdown. I came home, but we decided that we would put everything up online and we would create a virtual Corona Resource Center. That resource center was able to pool all the information we already had. So, for example, we had in 2018 created an innovation hub. In that innovation hub, we had the data in relation to all the sustainable development goals. So we had an understanding from the data that we'd got from the World Bank, from the IMF, from the UN and other multilateral organizations, together with the information that we had ourselves accrued over the years. So we really understood the position of each of our countries.
What specific challenges have you faced in addressing this, and how have you overcome them?
Well, one of the terrible things that we're facing, and it's an intersection with the coronavirus pandemic, is the climate crisis, because in the Pacific, we have just seen the whole area hit by the storms that's been caused by Cyclone Harold. So you have cut off from the rest of the community. Things aren't flying in, yet you have to have social distancing at a time when you're dealing with a crisis. So that's one of the issues. How do you keep that connectivity going?
You're coming on this with some climate change issues, the locusts, the cyclones, and so forth. The challenges of getting materials to and from locations in this age of physical distancing. And as I have spoken to many health professionals, they say the key is testing. And you spoke about some of the innovative tests that are coming up from the Commonwealth mm-hmm. countries. So how do you get materials, testing, PPE, the personal protective equipment, mm-hmm. where there is none from locations that there are none, and maintain that continuity of connectivity, given the disparate nature of some of the infrastructure on the communication side?
Well, what we are doing is by using the Coronavirus Center and all of our contacts, the multiplicity of networks within networks, that we are pushing the information through those different ventricles to make sure that the information is getting to where it needs. And this working out how innovatively we can move forward and looking at what joins us has really been successful.
Cameroon's traditional healers say they are being overwhelmed by the number of people seeking herbal medicine for prevention or treatment of the coronavirus. The rush for traditional healing comes as the Central African nation confirms more than 2,500 cases of COVID-19 and 121 deaths. But medical doctors caution on the use of herbal medicine for the coronavirus. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the capital.
Traditional healer Dewa, who only uses a first name, says his chain of herbal medicine clinics across Cameroon have been flooded with patients since the March outbreak of the coronavirus. He spoke via a messaging application from the southwestern town of Kumba. Dewa says in the last 2 months, he has received at least 800 people from Cameroon, the Central African Republic, and Chad, who say they are rushing for African herbal medicine because they have been told there is no modern cure for COVID-19. The demand for herbal medicine is so high, says Dewa, that he could not treat some patients because he ran short of the portions made from plants he harvests from the forest. Despite a lack of scientific evidence, he claims the portions can treat all the symptoms of COVID-19 and even save the infected from death. Diane Sop, a traditional healer in Yaoundé, says in the last month, she too has received about 200 patients seeking treatment from the coronavirus. Sop says on Tuesday morning alone, she received 10 patients, but had to send 4 away because she is still waiting for more herbal medicines. Medical researchers, doctors, and the Cameroon governments have urged patients not to rely on traditional medicine for COVID-19 and to instead seek treatment at hospitals. Douala City pharmacist Marilyn Peyu notes many Cameroonians do not live near hospitals but have easy access to traditional medicine. She says many drugs sold in hospitals and pharmacies in Africa originate from herbs and tree leaves that were effectively used to treat Africans before the arrival of modern medicine. The only challenges of African herbal medicine, says Peyu, are that it is difficult to preserve, may become toxic, and healers don't always know what dosage to prescribe. Cameroon's Minister of Public Health released a statement Thursday warning of quacks, claiming they can treat COVID-19 to financially exploit people suffering from or worried about the virus. Gideon Pelego, a researcher on African traditional medicine, says authorities should work to identify which herbs can treat COVID-19 and help to develop a cure.
We need both financial and moral assistance. This is no time for us to keep on doubting what African traditional medicine can do. What interests us now the more is getting into rescuing the world population that is in suffering.
The World Health Organization notes the use of products to treat COVID-19 that have not been robustly investigated can put people in danger. In a May 4 statement, the WHO said untested and unproven medicines give a false sense of security and distract from proven measures such as hand washing and physical distancing. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
China's sudden decision to ban Australian meat from four major suppliers is being seen as retaliation for Canberra's push for a global investigation into the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic. It's thought to have started at an animal market in the Chinese city of Wuhan late last year. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
China has indicated it will impose an 80% tariff on Australian barley exports. It has also banned red meat from four Australian suppliers that control more than a third of the country's exports to China. Opposition politicians and academics believe the move's a payback for Australia's call for an international inquiry into the COVID-19 crisis. Last month, China's ambassador to Australia threatened a consumer backlash against Australian exports because of Canberra's attempt to garner global support for a probe into the origins of the new coronavirus. But authorities in Beijing this week asserted that Australian agricultural exporters have violated quarantine regulations as well as other health and labelling issues. Australian Trade Minister Simon Birmingham also believes the suspension of meat exports is not linked to the call for a COVID-19 investigation.
Chinese officials, both publicly and privately, are adamant that these are unconnected, and so it's in the best interests of our farmers and exporters for us to treat these issues all on their merits, and certainly from our policy perspective, these are completely unconnected issues. Quite transparently, an investigation around the handling of COVID-19 has no relationship whatsoever to Australian exports of beef or barley.
While supporting a call for a COVID-19 investigation, opposition politicians in Australia believe the government has mismanaged its relationship with China, its biggest trading partner. There is a feeling that Canberra should have quietly sought backing for any global inquiry rather than antagonising China with public pronouncements. Australia's three main export industries, mining, tourism and education, have been dominated by the Chinese. Beijing criticised Australia for banning all flights from mainland China at the start of February in response to the growing coronavirus threat. The bilateral relationship was under strain well before then over allegations of Chinese meddling in Australia's domestic politics and claims of cyber espionage and theft. There are fears that a trade war over the origins of COVID-19 could damage Australian agriculture at a time when parts of the economy have collapsed because of the pandemic. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The World Food Programme warns the COVID-19 pandemic threatens to boost the number of hungry people in the Middle East and North African region to more than 47 million, an increase of more than 6.7 million from current figures. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This region has been mired in conflict, political instability, and economic problems for years. COVID-19 is compounding these difficulties. UN agencies warn fragile and dysfunctional governments in the Middle East and North Africa are ill-equipped to deal with the pandemic and its impact. The World Food Program's Global Report on Food Crises notes 20% of people around the world suffering from acute food shortages are to be found in the Middle East. WFP spokeswoman Elizabeth Beers says the report predicts the pandemic will increase extreme hunger and that many more people in the region will struggle to feed themselves as their means of livelihood disappear.
With little to no saving, no employment insurance, reduced food subsidies, people who engage in subsistence or informal work to support their families cannot endure sustained lockdowns. Many of the people receiving food assistance rely on it for their survival.
The World Food Program currently provides food to 23 million people in the region. More than two-thirds of this assistance is being channeled to people in Yemen and Syria who have been racked by war, illness, and hunger for years. WFP reports nearly 3.8 million children in 11 countries are no longer receiving school meals following school closures across the region, depriving most of the children of their only nutritious meal of the day. The UN Food Agency says it is finding alternative ways to make up for these missed meals in 9 of the 11 countries. These include the provision of take-home rations and home delivery of food. In some cases, WFP provides families with cash or vouchers they can use to buy food in local markets. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Here are some of the other stories we are following at VOA. The U.S. Pentagon said Wednesday it has awarded a $134 million contract to buy protective eyewear, gloves, gowns, and masks for medical personnel at over 15,000 U.S. nursing homes as it helps gather medical equipment to stop the spread of COVID-19. Defense Department spokesman says deliveries of the equipment started this week in New York, New Jersey, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, and Philadelphia. Authorities in the Chinese city where the novel coronavirus emerged launched an ambitious campaign on Wednesday to test all of its 11 million residents after a cluster of new cases raised fears of a second wave of infections. At least two of the city's main districts have delivered notices of the campaign door to door and sent out online questionnaires through community workers seeking information about tests people have had and if they belong to what are deemed high-risk groups. Sources say Yemen has more suspected coronavirus cases and deaths than the authorities have so far reported, as the United Nations warns the virus is spreading in the war-ravaged country. The Saudi-backed government, based in the south, and the Iranian-aligned Houthi movement headquartered in the north, have so far publicly announced a total of only 67 cases and 11 deaths. Stay with VOA for all the latest U.S. and world news.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Amid a spate of recent deadly attacks across Afghanistan, President Ashraf Ghani has ordered his national forces into offensive mode against the Taliban. Experts say the surge in violence does not bode well for the U.S.-Taliban peace deal signed in February, which was meant to serve as a first step toward inter-Afghan reconciliation. VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has the story.
A country scarred by decades of war. Militants storming the maternity ward of a Kabul hospital Tuesday, killing at least 14 people, including mothers and their newborn babies, stirring outrage.
I saw 8 dead bodies of women in this ward, and 7 other dead bodies were in the other ward on the beds. And they were hit on their heads or faces.
Sheer evil is how Secretary of State Mike Pompeo described the attack on mothers and newborns. The assault came on the same day as a suicide bombing of a funeral in eastern Nangarhar province. Together, the attacks killed at least 56 people. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani responded by ordering the country's security forces to shift from a defensive posture back to offensive mode against the Taliban and terrorist groups. His spokesman told VOA the Taliban broke their promise to reduce violence.
Nothing has happened. Instead, they focused more on military operations, on increasing the attacks on the Afghan forces and the Afghan people. So we've not seen a clear sign of a commitment that is needed within the Taliban to end this war.
The Taliban have denied involvement in Tuesday's attacks, but the recent spike in violence threatens to undermine the already tenuous peace process following the February deal signed by the U.S. and the Taliban. Daily attacks have continued since the peace deal was signed, breeding skepticism among many about the prospects for reconciliation.
That is not a demonstration of peace that you want to make if you're actually willing to get into proper negotiations with the Afghan government.
Despite the skepticism, U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan Reconciliation, Zalmay Khalilzad, took to Twitter following the attacks to call on the Afghan government and the Taliban to work together against a common enemy, saying now is the time to press forward on peace. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
In the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, the French Institute for Demographic Studies is releasing a report on what has happened to sub-Saharan African migrant women once they've arrived in France. The investigation involved interviews with almost 1,000 women at health facilities in and around Paris. The new report has disturbing findings on an issue that some say is not new. Joining us to talk more about it is Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. Catherine, tell us about this.
What they found was that at least 1 in 4 of these women were reporting sexual violence here in France, that they had been subjected to either coerced or forced to have sexual relations with someone who is unknown to them. Now, the reasons that this reporter has given for this are twofold. One is these women generally have what's called residential instability. They are being looked after in emergency accommodation, that's at best, or they're on the streets. They just do not have anywhere safe to go. If they do have somewhere, chances are it's in a state facility, which doesn't really give them security, which perhaps doesn't separate men from women, doesn't necessarily have separate dormitories for them. The other cause could be administrative insecurity. Now, that could mean that they don't have yet the paperwork. So that means they're often forced to live on the streets because they don't have the money, and they're often forced into areas of the economy where they will be abused. And that's not just for people who are taken into the sex workers category. There are all sorts of reasons why these women are victims. But the point is that they are incredibly vulnerable. They're here, they're in exile, and there is just no one, it seems, taking a hand, or taking in hand more like, to get these women more protection.
Right. It sounds like this is not really a new story.
No, this isn't a new story. And 3 or 4 years ago, the Council of Europe looked at the precarious living conditions of women, particularly from sub-Saharan Africa, and France, and as well in Italy, and said that they are vulnerable and that protection is actually limited, they said. But the problem is, since that report came out, there has been this big wave of migration to particularly France from sub-Saharan Africa. We're looking at something like 13% of the migrant population in France is from sub-Saharan Africa. So there are more of them here. It is also interesting that all these reports do bring to light the educational level of these women who have fled. 60% of these women have secondary school education. So we're talking about women who are educated, who know their worth in society, and for them as well to be subjected to this sort of violence on a daily basis is, according to this report, really quite disturbing.
And the other thing that was disturbing when I read it was that many of these women, about a third of them, were infected with HIV, not before they got there, but after they got there, potentially because of forced rape, basically.
Yes, indeed. You know, these women had no choice who they were having sex with. Certainly says a lot about what sort of environment these women were forced into this sexual violence. And yes, you're quite right. And the fact that they now having to keep receiving treatment is also just compounding the problems that these women are facing in a country at a time when it's really difficult.
What about now that we have this global pandemic happening? Is France seeing less of an influx of sub-Saharan African migrants?
They are at the moment, and that's mostly because Malta, which is one of the first ports that migrants come into, that having been said, there are two boats just offshore of Malta carrying several hundred migrants waiting to be allowed to land. But of course, the area that these migrants come from, and that's mostly Niger, particularly the north of Niger. Again, we're still seeing migrants there who in the desert still trying to make their way up to Libya, despite the controls, migration in that area and across those deserts is going on. And when we think about it, it was just last week that the International Organization for Migration, the UN organization, launched an appeal for supplementary aid to help the needs of the migrants that are stuck in that desert at the moment. The IOM was asking for $10 million. So it's still an issue. There are still migrants not just stranded in the desert, but also making their way to Libya in the hope that one day they will come to France to the situation. One of the big factors to come out of this report is when you see what has happened to these women, you see that they were vulnerable from the minute they left their village. They're vulnerable to sexual violence and being exploited from the time they leave their village, getting across the desert, getting to Libya, getting onto a boat. At every stage in that process, they are at risk of needing to give sexual favors just to get to the next stage in a long journey to the French capital.
Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. 32-year-old Barbados-born singer Rihanna has stormed into the Sunday Times rich list of musicians at number 3 with an estimated wealth of $576 million in U.S. dollars, thanks partly to the success of her fashion and cosmetic brands. Now based in London, Rihanna overtook some of Britain's most famous musicians on the list of the country's most wealthy, such as Mick Jagger and Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones, Elton John, and Rod Stewart. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Vunganyi, I'm Lori London in Washington. Take care and be well. Something that you never seen. Something that you never been. But I wake up and nothing's wrong. Just get ready for work, 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 work. You see me, I be work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. That's something about that work, work.
When you walk out, na, 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 na. What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.